If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. Welcome to the Get Stuff Done podcast. Today, I'm joined by Chung Jin Chung, who goes by Jin, a friend of mine who is a Korean-based lawyer and currently the Asia Practice Group Head at KN Legal. He has over 15 years of industry experience, mostly advising companies on their energy projects around the world, particularly across the energy value chain in oil and gas. He has a number of other professional accolades, such as being a specialist mediator at the Singapore International Mediation Group, the chair of the Energy Resources Committee at Law Asia, as well as an international arbitrator at the Korea Commercial Arbitration Board International. He has a number of other chairman positions, as well as co-chair positions and association memberships. He's somebody that I wanted to get on the podcast because I believe that he brings a very international, globalized, entrepreneurial mindset towards what a lot of people consider to be perhaps a more traditional industry, such as the legal profession. So, Jin, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, the cool thing about Jin is he's also a squash player, as am I, and that's how we first got to meet each other through playing here in Seoul. And I think that it's always good to not be a one-trick pony, right? If you're only working and you're only doing your job, then you're probably pretty one-dimensional kind of person. So I'm glad that you're obviously not, because you have squash as well as other things. I know that you also travel a lot for your job. Tell me a little bit about your current role at KN Legal and what you do there.
The KN Legal is headquartered in the US. I'm actually building the clients in Korea and Asia Pacific areas right now, because KN is focused in US and Canada and Middle East only. And they try to expand their businesses in Asia region. So they hire me for that particular reasons. But I'm all over the place. If the clients want me to go Northport, I'm there tomorrow. So yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
Where's the one place you haven't been that you would really like to go to?
I want to go to Spain.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's somewhere you've not been to, but you would like to.
People don't really know about Spain, but Spain has oil and gas businesses a lot.
I see.
Yeah, people don't really know. Italy.
I did not know that.
Italy is the same thing, because people think that it's a fashion country, but they have oil and gas businesses going. Spain is the same thing. And I also heard a lot of good things about Spain, about food, people, weather, everything. So I just want to go.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you been to Spain?
I have been to Spain, and most recently I went to Menorca, which is one of the islands off the coast of Spain. I can definitely thoroughly recommend it. The food is fantastic. So you, as I mentioned in the introduction, you're very specialized in the energy sector, particularly oil and gas. Have you always been for your entire career in that area, or were you in a different area and moved in? And if so, was that a choice that you made?
Oh, I started as a lawyer in MA practice group, and then I spent a year, and I thought that I want to contribute, my little legal skills and knowledges to the Korean companies. And I found that out while I'm doing energy MA transaction. I found that Korea is almost 100% dependent energy dependent country in the world. Korea is importing 95% of energy resources from outside, and especially oil and gas is almost 100%. And I asked my senior partners that, is there any Korean speaking legal experts in that area? It was 15 years ago, and they said no. So I thought, why not? I can be the first one. And then I asked, can you get a job? Can you bring the clients in? And they said, probably not. I was at a Kimenjang. And I got to move. And then I went to SK, and it went from there. So,
So for the people not in Korea, so Kim and Chang, that's Korea's largest domestic law firm. And for SK, that's a real multinational, multi-industry conglomerate based here in Korea. So it sounds like you had quite a kind of entrepreneurial view on this opportunity in oil and gas already 15 years ago.
Yeah, it was, you can tell it was entrepreneur, but from my wife's perspective, it was a crazy move, right? Because, you know, people talk about niche market, but it means no one was doing it.
You were doing A. I mean, that's safe as houses, right? There's this forever A work in the legal profession.
Yeah, that's true. Also, there are tons of money, right, in that M&A transactions. But energy, it's a big deal, but not many deals every year. It's a huge deal. That's why there are not many deals in a year. And even though Korea is almost 100% dependent on energy sources outside, at that time, 15 years ago, a lot of companies, they rely on only international law firms. So they don't really have any Korean-speaking lawyers. And I found that out going into in-house counsel job is more comparative than going into the international legal market, because I think that you should learn commercial side and technical side from it so you can talk to the people inside, not from the outside. So that was my motivation to go as an in-house counsel. Yeah.
And I'm immediately drawn to the fact that obviously you speak English very well, and there's also a specific accent that's coming through. Is that from? I mean, it's obviously not derived from working in Korea. Tell me more about that.
Well, what kind of accent do I have?
It's definitely American.
Okay. Okay. Because I went.
I would even go so far to say, okay, please.
Yeah, it's not from Busan or anything. It's actually, I went to the law school in the States only 3 years, and I loved basketball. Still, I love basketball. In Korea, we have AFN, right? The American Military Service Broadcasting. So they broadcast basketball. So I watched it. I think I pick up my pronunciation from that AFN thing.
Basketball sports commentators.
Yeah. And you know what? I met my wife through basketball too.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did that happen? I have to ask.
Oh, I have a basketball club. Oh, I made it from when I was in college. And then I have to go
in the U.S.
In Korea. I went to Yonsei. Okay. So, and then I have to
shout out to all my Yonsei alumni out there as well. I'm also Yonsei.
Yeah, sure. Akaraka, right?
Akaraka.
Yeah, even though we lost 5 times in a row and Yonggo, still, there's a chance we can win next time this year.
The key point is Yonggo, not Koyon.
Hey, there's no Koyonjan. It's only Yonggojan. Yonsei goes first.
We're gonna have to do some crazy subtitles for this to explain to everybody outside Korea what that's all about. Anyway.
No,
meeting your wife, through basketball.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, because I'm at a basketball club and then I have to go to the law school in the States. So we need to recruit one more guy because we only have 6 guys at the time. So I try to recruit one more player. And we had a flyer at Yonsei Okta. So she called me up. I invited her to her play. And she played one time.
Perfect.
Perfect. See?
When it's love, it's love.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing, Jin. And I'm glad that sport has brought you together. So what made you decide to go and study overseas? Had you spent any other time in other countries prior to that?
Yes. After 2 years in a college, I had a chance to go to U.S., you know, English programs for a year. For 6 months English program and 6 months in a class. And at that time, I went to the law school, one class in the law school, because I lost the direction. And I just went inside the classroom, I didn't know that it was a law school class. And I spent 10 minutes, before they kicked me out. I spent 10 minutes and I loved it. The class was, I think it was a contract law. And I was shocked. The logic they taught to the class, and I loved that case law. And after that experience, I thought, yeah, this is the one I want to get into. Oh, I had a dream before, because I want to be a prosecutor to prosecute gangsters in Korea. Too hard for me. Okay, this is the second chance for me. So yeah, that was the tipping point.
Wow. And so from that 10-minute taster of contract law, it forged an entire career in the legal profession. That's absolutely fantastic. I didn't know that's how you got into the profession. And so what does a typical day look like for you? And maybe you don't have a typical day, but generally what is it that you're mostly spending your time doing as a senior lawyer in your sector?
As a senior lawyer, you meet a lot of people, and not only clients but also just people, because you want to hear what's going on outside, what's in the market, who's the leader, what's going to be the next project, what's going to be the next businesses. You just want to talk to people, discuss about potential business, but also you want to talk to just people, because hear from their personal life, want to make connections with them. Once you get that some point, you meet people for the first time to want to have a business talk, but second time, third time, you just want to meet them because you like them. You have this personal connections. That's the mode of meeting people these days.
So I'm essentially also the same in my business. Do you have kind of process around that? How do you make sure that you're meeting the right people?
That's a good question. Always. Who's going to be the right person? But that's more business way, right? If you meet people with business proposals, to me, I'm introvert. So I don't really ask a lot of business questions to potential clients or people I meet, because I don't want to drag them that, I have this business proposal to meet you. And I don't really think about this. Is this right person to meet? But I'm thinking that only thing I'm thinking, I don't want to waste my time, because, time is, you cannot buy time. What I'm thinking is, even if I meet some people, and for example, I met this guy in the lounge at the airport Dubai last Friday. I was reading contracts in my laptop, and he was looking over me. I was like, okay, what is doing it? And he's like, are you working at the law firm? And I said, yes. And he has this business in the States. He's a CEO for aerospace manufacturing company. And then we end up to talk, and then he gave me a business card, and that's how it works right now. I focus on the time I have a communication. I don't really think about this is the right person.
No, it's interesting, but always mindful of not wasting time. But I think also the key point that you illustrated with the example is that you're very, despite saying that you're an introvert, very open to talking to unknown people, or at least people in public places. I'm not saying you're doing it all the time, but you're at least open to doing so, right?
Yes, I'm not the first one to start talking, usually.
Okay.
If someone's wants to talk, I'll talk, but I'm not the first one. It's a good point. I always focus on, I don't want to waste my time. It's not a right person, but I criticize something always, and I'm very negative. I try to avoid those people, definitely waste my time, and it wastes my energy a lot.
Right, right. So you try to surround yourself with optimistic and positive people where possible.
Yeah, just like a good, I needed too many, like Jim Gordons around me.
1,000, that sounds like a few too many to me. But let me ask the go-to question for all my guests that come on the podcast, which is, how do you go about getting stuff done? Everybody has almost infinite to-do list. We're all pulled in lots of different directions. Mm-hmm. So I know that you also travel internationally a lot, mm-hmm. for work as well. So on a daily basis, as practical or kind of specific basis, how mm-hmm. do you make sure that you get everything done that you need to do?
First of all, as a profession, I always talk to clients. I provided them with a deadline first. I don't wait my deadline. I don't ask the deadline for them. If they said, oh, this is a deadline, I always said, I'll give you one more day earlier. So I make mm-hmm, sure that I'm with it. And then second, I tell my wife, because if you have a wife, my wife.
I do, yes.
You know what I'm saying, because if you tell your wife, you don't want to promise you cannot make it, right? So it's a promise. I live with a promise. So if I said, I have this client, this is my deadline. My wife is like my manager. She comes back and say, did you do it? And she always check. So it's like, no. Sometimes we got into the fight, but it's a good manager. So my strategy to get stuff done is tell people, tell my clients,
okay.
tell my wife, tell my people, this is what I'm doing. And I'm just going to accomplish this by this deadline, or I'm taking this exam. So you don't want to fail. Once you tell somebody I'm doing this, you don't want to fail.
I love it. I love it. Because so basically you are bringing your own self-accountability by opening up what it is that you've got to get done. And then you're always thinking they know that I've got that thing to do. No, I really like that because I think a lot of human nature is we want to internalize. We want to just try to like get on with it and struggle ourselves. Yeah. And only after the fact, then we open up and say, look, I wasn't able to do it, right? Which I guess is down to the classic, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission, right? But what you're saying is that opening up front is key to that. What about when it comes to managing others? In your current role, do you have people reporting into you? How do you go about making sure that they do what you expect of them as a leader?
First of all, I don't really expect anything from them. I'm more a supporter. I'm not controlling them. I'm not. Yeah, people call me a manager, but you can manage people. You can support them. So I always try to support. So every day I'm. Talk to them and, what do you need? What's happening? And what happens last night? If you need anything, just, I can help. I'm here for you. I'm not here to control you. I'm here to support you all the time. So if there is anything in your personal life, in your professional life, just let me know. I know you have a capability. That's why we hire you. So I have no doubt on your capabilities and skills. You'll meet the deadline. If you miss it, that's my responsibility. I tell them in the first place, I trust you. So I always go and ask them, how can I support? That's the only thing I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's a very interesting approach. And have you acquired this from an example in your own life that you've kind of reciprocated, or is it something that you yourself have kind of developed along the way through personal experience?
I learned from my parents.
Okay.
You know, Korea, kids are in a school until what, 12 a.m., 1 a.m. when they're in high school, and parents push a lot, pressure a lot. Well, my parents didn't tell me whether I did a homework or, get a good scores. They didn't ask me anything. They always tell me that we trust you. Whatever you want to do, we'll support you. We love you. especially my mom, has no doubt whatever I did. I was not a good kid from middle school to the high school, but she still trusted in me. She has faith in me. She just loved me. So I learned from them.
Wow. That's amazing. And especially when probably all around you, your friends were getting that pressure and yet that's obviously fully supportive environment that just allows people to do it on themselves. But clearly some level of talent that was innate to you to allow you to do that, right? Because some people need more guidance, right? Some people need at times to be told what to do in order that they can then go on and do it. So I think also credit to you as well for being able to do it yourself in that way and follow that path. I mentioned that you travel a lot internationally for work. I know that you, have been to many countries. What are some of the biggest differences that you see around doing business in different countries? What are some of the maybe, let's say, challenges of doing business across borders?
If you do a lot of transaction work or dispute work as a lawyer, you see culture differences all the time. Just for example, it's one word. For example, the term of change has different concept to Indonesian people, to Koreans, to Middle East people. What's the change? Because I'm specialized in constructions too. So what is the change in construction work? Culturally, it has different meaning into it. So the culture is big differences. And the other thing is experience. If we talk about always Korea, the governments and business people talk about Korea is very internationally exposed, but I think we're not that exposed a lot. So that experiences you have, it opens your mindset and, you have more experience than others. You probably want to expose yourself to the others more. And that's two big things, culture and experience.
That's really interesting that you experience directly that nuance of terminology, because of course every contract term is so important. Yes. So going into those situations, knowing that the other party has a different impression or understanding of that word, how do you then make sure that the result is optimal?
Optimal to me is as personal as a profession, I don't win or lose. I try to mediate. There's no winners and losers, I think. It's 50 for the contract. So always try to understand the culture background. So before I go to dispute or negotiate a contract, before I go to a business trip, I read their history first and understand what they have been through. What kind of languages they have, what kind of ethnics they have, what kind of, religions they have, which food are famous, what they're like. I try to understand and learn a lot about themselves and go to their country and then understand more. So that helps me a lot. That's the first thing I do.
And so you mentioned a key one there, which is negotiation, which is often very much the kind of front line of culture clash and cultural conflict. In your experience as a Korean working for an American firm, doing business in perhaps even in third and fourth countries, What are some of the biggest difficulties that you've come across, or what maybe some of the largest surprises that you've had when it comes to cross-cultural difference?
There are a lot of surprises. U.S. lawyers, they're aggressive. So, for example, as a lawyer, Koreans are reluctant to ask clients to pay me, and we're not asking, even though they're late. We just wait. And then we always said, how are you? And then, you know, are you okay? Your business is doing good. That means I want to get paid. But US, right. They send you a letter. Here's a notice. Legal claim. If you don't pay me, I'll sue you. That's more US. Right. Right. And MEA, they're always inshallah, right? You can wait. Well, I'll pay you. They promise all the time. I'll pay you tomorrow, inshallah. And the next day, and then the same thing. I'll pay you next day, inshallah. So that's different concept. So I struggle a lot because I have Korean clients who has a product in the MEA, and then we're based in the US. So this thing gets so complicated. So it is tough situations I'm facing.
But at least it sounds exciting. All right, at least there's something new to deal with every deal, with every project, when that combination of origin and location is always changing. Right now, what is your working base structure? What I mean is, you are not really co-located with many other colleagues, right? You're relatively remote base. Is that right?
For now, yes. I'll move to Houston next year.
Okay. But would I be right in saying you spent most of your career being office-based, surrounded by colleagues?
Yes.
How is that, as a different way of working?
Well, that's a good point. I didn't realize it, and it makes sad. I'm not surrounded by people. I don't really see not much different, because I think it's right out. You know, we just came out of COVID situation. People are isolated all the time.
Yeah.
And then I moved back to the private practice right after it. So I don't really, I don't really have a system, systems to support me, because I have IT systems in the US. I know I have colleagues and coworkers and associates and partners in everywhere in the world, but I don't really have anyone physically in Korea to support me. I struggle sometimes if I have to, for example, if I have to buy a laptop, I have to go through, Houston. And if I have colleagues in Korea, I can just, talk to her or him and buy me a laptop. Mm. But I have to go through Houston. So a little technical issues, but I don't really feel any different. One thing is that if you are in a workplace where it's surrounded by your coworkers, if you want to take a break and if you want to talk to people, you can go to talk to them, and then you can have a coffee or something. But me here, I can't take that chance. I don't have that chance. It's a good opportunity to communicate with others, especially your coworkers, build up the relationship, and you can open up your, have the connection. And I miss it. That's the big part.
Okay. I've only visited law firms in Korea, and what I saw there were incredibly quiet offices and very segregated offices, essentially every lawyer having their own office, right? There's not, I haven't seen an open floor with hundreds of, open plan desks and such. Is that typical for all law firms around the world?
That's a good question. It depends on the firm's philosophy. I heard that English law firms, they have open spaces for associate and partners, and then you can just put your laptop and work. But typically, every lawyer has their room. Each lawyer has their own room to go into the work. But my law firm, we're crazy loud. We always talk to each other. We yell at each other, and So they knock my door if I'm, I just went to the Saudi and Dubai office. Oh my God, I can't even take 5 minutes alone. They ask me, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm working, come on. And 5 minutes later, and the associate at Jin, what are you doing? I'm working. They want to talk, they want to, that's the culture differences. MEA, Middle East people, they really want to talk to you all the time, because that's their culture. Korea, after work, we go to drink, and then that's the time you talk.
Conversations. It's work time.
Middle East, they want to talk all the time.
All the time. Okay. All the time. Interesting. Yeah. Because my impression was like, everyone is office based, but still everyone's very segregated and closed off in their offices. So
it is.
So it's interesting to hear.
Oh, one. The funny thing is, I heard that some of the law firm has the policies, open door policy, because they always close the door, so they cannot see what they're doing. So they have policies. You have to open the door unless you have a call with a client. So, yep.
Yeah, literal open door policy required. Okay. The other thing that we often talk about or try to talk about on every episode of the podcast is about transferable skills. And, obviously the legal profession is very much, it's you pass the bar, you're then qualified to do that. But then there is obviously a wide range of skills that vary according to, like you've mentioned, about being in-house versus being private practice, big firms, small firms. Country difference as well, not to mention sectors. What would you say in your mind are the most important transferable skills required to do what you do?
As you explained it really well, to become a lawyer, you have to pass the bar. It means you have capabilities and legal knowledge. So I have no doubt. As a professional, personally, I want inherit or transfer, if you say it's a personal skill, I want to transfer my emotional, more empathetic, not sympathetic mindset, because I bring my associate all the time to the negotiations or client meeting, always, because I want to show them that I really care about my clients. It's not about the business. First thing I always, if they have some kind of personal injury cases, I always call them up and ask, are you okay? Is there anything I can support? Before, being a lawyer, we're all human. So, and people, you see a lot of people that MZ generations, they want to be alone. I don't believe it. They have different method to get attached to each other by, SNS. That's different types. Us, we're, beer or soju. That's the method we are connecting each other. So my transferable skill is that's the emotional tactics. It's not a tactics, right. But it's that skill set.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is also, it's a kind of agility, I think, that you're explaining as well, yes. That you have, because being empathetic is different for different people, right? They perceive empathy differently. So I think in order to be effective with different people, different approaches are needed. So I think you're also explaining that that emotional agility is also important, because, like you said, it's a people first at the end of the day. Yeah. Okay, and in terms of you mentioned about getting paid and the cultural difference of doing that, and from what I can see, practice partners or heads of practice, they're almost running little businesses within their firms, right? Book of business, a set of clients, and when lawyers go from one firm to another, they take as much of those clients with them as they can. That immediately strikes me that there is a kind of a balance between it's almost like working in the business and on the business, right? You've got to constantly be doing BD. You've got to be constantly, reaching out, building client networks, and building those relationships, whilst at the same time taking care of the stuff that you get paid to do. How do you balance that?
It's a tough question. I don't think I can get the balance at all. You always, it depends on your day. Each day is different. So, you have a plan to do focus on your work today, not BD. It doesn't work that way. You get a call from the clients. They want to meet you for whatever they want to meet. So if we go back to your probably second question, I said that, you know, right people things, you know, you want to meet the right people, is time focus. If I do my work, I just focus on my work. If I have to meet people, I just focus on the people. Because if I meet people, I don't look up my phones and checking my emails. No, to me, balance is more, okay, if you meet people, focus on the people. If you do the work, just do the work. That gives me more balance. Okay. So I can save more time. So I can have more mm-hmm. time for my family and duties and work. People usually think that they can do the multitask, but I don't think I can do it. I'm not a multitasker. Okay. I can do only one thing.
Got it. Got it. Yeah. So it's about 100% focus in whatever you have to do. Yeah. And what you're saying is that, like that Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a great plan until you get punched in the face, right? Yeah. And what you're saying is that stuff is always cropping up and that's inevitable. And rather than try to worry about that, you just deal with it and you go fully into that on any one occasion. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's you know, pretty much all that we have time for today. So, Jin, thanks so much for being my guest and sharing your experiences. I know that you also when you are giving kind of greetings around special occasions, certain times of year, you're also sharing little quotations and you know, special relevant quotes from certain people. And I know this is putting you on the spot, but do you have a favorite quote or one in particular that you would like to share with the Get Stuff Done podcast?
I haven't prepared for this. You never said anything about this. It's, okay.
All lawyers. Know, this is core lawyer skill right here.
Yeah, lawyers, lawyers, whatever, right?
I didn't hear that one, actually. That's the first time for me to hear that one. So,
okay. My quote for today is, every day is the first day for you. Okay, whatever happens the last day, yesterday, 2 days ago, it happened. You think about it, you regret about it, it's not going to change. So this is the first day. Every day is first moment. Right now it's 4 p.m. 5 p.m. is the first 5 p.m. There is no future. There's no history. I know history builds you up, but you need to focus on the time you have right now. It's precious. That's why we call present, right? So enjoy your present.
Wonderful. Thanks, Jin. Thank you so much. Thank you. And on that note, everybody, let's get stuff done.
Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening, as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week, because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.